Welcome to the IT Babble podcast, where we talk about educational technology and a whole lot more. You can find our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe, or your very favorite podcasting app. Also, you can find our blog at www.itbabble.com.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. It's been a spell. It has been a while. I'm just looking here. I think maybe a month. Yeah,
it's been a while.
Been about a month since we've been on there. But Tony has a good excuse. I have zero excuse other than it was end of the year and I was busy. But Tony, you have a new baby. Congratulations.
That's right. Yep, new baby. And that's why I've not been podcasting on Sundays. But we now have the situation mostly under control. So I'm back in the normal cycle.
Oh, geez. So are you doing the... But with my kids, it was when they were infants, it was like 4 hours, like at night, like Jen and I would do shifts and, you know, 4 hours, well, wake up and then one of us would feed, change, and then we, you know.
So my wife is breastfeeding the child. So the way that it works right now, and I'm not going to get into all the science behind the breastfeeding, what you got to do. But we can't store any extra stuff right now. We can't store any breast milk. So the way that what we're doing is I'm just giving my wife breaks. And the baby during that time, if she gets hungry, she's allowed to have one bottle of formula. And if that doesn't work, then she has to go down to my wife. So
yeah,
basically, I would say like so far, like most nights, if I give her one bottle of formula at the right time, and that's what had to like kind of pin that down, at the right time, she's good for like 4 hours with me. And then my wife has her the rest of the time because she'll sleep and then she needs to eat again. But my wife's like, will only let us do one bottle of formula. So there's not really anything I can do.
Yeah.
And then, but then after that, like she sleeps pretty well. She's not like my son who was definitely harder as a newborn, but also we were screwing up stuff like every 5 minutes because he was our first child. So it's a lot easier now. Like we kind of got everything, you know, figured out.
Nice. That's great. That is great.
And been watching a lot of Airwolf. Patrick, Airwolf has like rewatching Airwolf has changed my life. Not only has it given me the format we need for our new podcast, which I plan to try to get you to do the first, like, the pilot of in July.
Okay.
Okay. Not only has it inspired me, but have you ever watched Airwolf with subtitles on? Because I'm telling you, there's things that you think you hear, but when you read them, it's not what you think. We could have written Airwolf all of it in 3 days, all four seasons or whatever, in 3 days, as long as we stayed slightly intoxicated. It's the worst writing in the world. I didn't realize how bad it was because I watched it as a child.
Yeah,
it's horrible.
Yeah. I haven't seen it recently.
Let me ask you a question.
Okay, go for it.
The main character, Stringfellow Hawk, who is played by Jan Michael Vincent.
Yes.
His name is Stringfellow Hawk. His main mission isn't to make money, but he will fly Airwolf as long as the government will look for his brother, his lost brother.
Okay. All right.
Do you remember his brother's name?
I do not. I do not.
Okay. So on the show, his brother's name, they say Sinjin Hawk. Sinjin.
Oh, yes. Yes. That's right. Yeah. I remember thinking that was such a cool name at the time.
Except, Patrick, on the subtitles, it comes up as Saint John. So I looked this up, and actually there's an old pronunciation of Saint John as Sinjin, like Saint John said fast. Saint John, Sinjin.
I had no idea.
Yeah, because it's ridiculous. Like, there's the, like, can you imagine you're the writer and you're like, okay, we're going to call this character Saint John, but that's not cool enough.
It's not cool enough.
You will say it Sinjin. And I'm sure everyone's like, why don't you just call the guy Sinjin and come up with another name, like it's his nickname?
Yeah. Why does
No. We're going to do St. John.
It's backstory. So let me ask.
So on the script that you have to read as an actor, it says St. John, Patrick, but you got to remember to say Sinjin.
Oh, my gosh.
How messed up is that? That just Airwolf has just changed my life. It's taken me down a whole new path for podcasting. I'm just trying to work it out so that it's super organized, but I think it's going to blow you away, Patrick. I think people are going to be entertained.
I can't wait. I'm looking forward to it. This is a fantastic idea. I loved Airwolf as a kid. I thought it was great. I thought it was the best. I liked it more than Knight Rider. That's how much I liked it.
So much out there that I forgot about besides Airwolf, man. There's a lot. There's a lot, Patrick. What about 1984 V?
Oh, I didn't. That's horrible. That's really. I've seen it. Yeah.
Really horrible.
It's just terrible. It makes no sense at all.
I need to see what movies fall into the Mystery Science Theater 3000 category, so you don't have to do copyright, because that's really the way to live.
Oh, all right. Man. All right.
So before we get started, Patrick.
Yeah. Let's do it.
What are you drinking?
Oh, yeah.
What am I drinking?
What am I drinking? I am drinking water tonight. Just water. I've been battling a cough, and so just a little water just to kind of soothe it. Well, the throat that is.
I've been battling my lawn, so I'm drinking an Andy Gator.
Oh, nice. Nice. And Andy Gator, right?
Indigator by Abita. It's the 8% one that's like a weird lager, IPA Pilsner thing. I don't know.
Yep.
It's weird, but it's good. ISTE apparently is in New Orleans this year, and I could drive down there, so I've been thinking about it.
Oh.
I will decide in a week.
I cannot do it. We have a wedding to attend to, and then kids have got summer camps, and we've got a pretty full schedule this summer. So we are unable to do any conferences. So, but that's all right. ISTE, I've never been. What I hear about it is, if you're a teacher, ISTE's you can find some really cool, neat things. If you're a tech director, you're not going to find things that like light your hair on fire. But what you get to talk to are vendors. You get kind of an intro into the vendors and maybe like different things that they might be selling. And that's kind of what I've heard. But I don't know. That was from somebody from quite a few years ago. So maybe it has changed and upped their game a little bit. So cool. Cool.
We'll see.
We'll see. You know what else we'll see is you testing out my network.
That's right. So I'm always like in these like groups talking about IT stuff, and these schools are always like, is there someone that we can – do you guys recommend someone that we can hire to test our network and to like do this like whatever? There's all these different kinds of tests you can pay people to do. And I'm really skeptical – because I've been at two schools in the United States. Both of them had reports from the past from different companies about security. And I read the report, and then I ran tests, and I found out that the report did not match the results I was getting. So then I started thinking about it, and I'm like, I don't think the company – so when I was doing my CISSP, they really, really – double down on these testing concepts. So there's white box testing where you provide me with all the information and I just confirm that it's true. That's basically what it is. I'm not that it's a little bit more detailed, but basically you don't hide anything from me. And then you say, here's this, take it and make sure that we're correct. So I'm not really discovering anything unless, I mean, I could discover stuff, but it wouldn't be a really big surprise. Like, you're expecting me to do everything on this list.
Yeah.
Then there's Black Box. Black Box is where you don't give me any information. I'm literally going to hack your network.
Oh, wow.
And I might go as far as social engineering your staff to get their username and passwords.
Oh, okay.
Right. So I'm going to like call around and be like, hey, Margaret, Tom asked me to give you a call. He said that he needs your password, that kind of thing.
Yeah, or like so, looking for print servers. Like, it's a school. I bet they have a print server, and maybe I can get it that way.
So a lot of these companies that you can hire to do email phishing, there's a black box version of that where you don't give them the email addresses. They see if they can get all your email addresses from different sources and use those against you, right? So, but the middle is gray box testing. And what I realized is that black box testing is really expensive and it's slow.
Yep.
So most schools won't pay for it. And so these other companies were probably doing white box testing, which really relies, Patrick, on the school being very honest about things with the testing company. So it's not that the testing company is doing anything wrong. It's just that they ask a lot of questions and they're really only working with what the school gives them. So gray box is in the middle. So with a gray box test, I'm going to send, and this is what I'm going to do to you. This is like bullet point number two. So I'll just put it all together.
All right.
Tony's going to destroy Patrick's network, which is not really true. I hope I don't do that. What you do is like you could send a person, but I want to do this without, I'm trying to think about this conceptually. And I asked this in my group and nobody responded. Okay. So that even means they think I'm an idiot. So okay. They think I'm crazy. I'm like, why can't, have you guys thought about doing this like remotely with a service? They don't have to come on your campus. And so basically I don't have to come to your campus. I have to send you a virtual machine. You've got to install it on an Apple or Windows laptop or desktop. Then I connect to it and ask you simply for your Wi-Fi credentials. So if you have like, let's say you have like a student Wi-Fi, a faculty Wi-Fi, and a guest Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
You provide me those three credentials only, and then I do the rest. So the gray box part is I'm not hacking your Wi-Fi. I'm not social engineering people. I'm not stealing passwords. You're providing me the base level of access. So I'm kind of simulating someone like a student or a teacher, their device that has a trust relationship with your network already. And I've hacked into that device to do whatever I'm going to do. That's kind of, it's the simulation. So, and I would say that is very reasonable because if most of these network penetrations, like a person's laptop or desktop gets compromised, it's already inside the network.
Yeah.
I used to work with someone who thought that the biggest security threat was like he literally believed, and he was stressed about this every day, that North Koreans were trying to break into the school's network because of port scans on the firewall.
I was like,
99% of all this stuff is internal. Like, it's either a person who's mad who works here, a person who's mad who was fired, or someone who is not paying attention to something and they've let something into their device and now it's wreaking havoc on our systems.
Yeah.
Like it's internal, and that's so, I have been working. So this is what I've been doing on and off in the evenings. I have built a virtual machine that runs Kali Linux that is configured to do certain tests that would be common inside of a school with certain scripts and stuff already on the desktop. So you connect it up. You make sure that the computer that you're putting it on is connected to your network. You start the virtual machine, and then I should be able to remote into the virtual machine and start the process. That's really it. You don't actually even have to give me the Wi-Fi information. You just connect it to the Wi-Fi. You connect the host machine to the Wi-Fi before you start the virtual machine. The good part about that is, as the tester, I don't have any credentials to your network.
That's right.
And we can set that. You can say, look, Tony, we're going to run this test for 3 hours. And after that, you shut the virtual machine down and I lose access. Now, that might be true if I find like a hole in your network and I'm nefarious, but we would sign a contract in real life. So that wouldn't happen. that's what I would like to try to do. So I'm going to send you this deployment, and we're going to see if it works. And I'll tell you what I find on your network.
Okay.
And yeah. If you're asking, I've been running it on my network, and I found lots and lots of interesting things that I started to address. And these things are probably common at any school because things just, you know, over time, things are on your network that probably shouldn't be. They don't seem like a big deal. So you just forget about them and you move on. And maybe it's something that's always been fine. And then recently there's been like a security bulletin about it and you just aren't aware of it because it seems like a minor thing, like something that runs an HVAC system or something that runs your PA system. You know, one of these kind of peripherals that are out there that can be a risk. So an insect just flew into my mouth.
Oh, God. So, ah.
Yeah. It's okay. I'm rolling with it. Don't edit that out.
I'm not. I'm leaving it right in there. Just shows you how hardcore we are at IT Babble.
Yeah, we just keep going. I'm outside because my baby is sleeping in my podcasting area. And that's how it is now. I'm just outside with the insects.
Nice. Fantastic.
And my next and last topic tonight was really just everyone get ready for multi-factor authentication to ruin your life. Starting this week. So if anybody wants to know, and I keep saying this at work, this is coming from our insurance company and from some of our service providers.
Yep.
We don't have a choice with this stuff. We have to do it. So from tomorrow, we have a week. So I gave them like a timeline. So I told them we would start June 6th and we'd finish at the end of the week. We have like 20 users who, based off of the type of data they use, are going to have an additional layer of authentication when they sign into their desktop or laptop. So they can't just sign in anymore with their username and password.
Yeah.
And according to Blackbaud, all of our users who use Razor's Edge for fundraising, we also now have to turn on their multi-factor authentication.
Oh, boy. Man, yeah. And for the people out there who, Blackbaud is a school information system, and Razor's Edge is for fundraising and alumni, keeping track of that data, and Financial Edge is tuition transactions that happen throughout the school, like the general ledger and all that, budgets and everything are all done there. So if you're unsure...
Yeah. So I think everybody needs to prepare for this stuff. And Google just put out a bulletin. We use one of their backend services for our Blackbaud authentication, which covers us for multi-factor for normal Blackbaud.
Yep. Same here.
They just put out a bulletin I'm going to get into tomorrow. I don't know. I don't know if it's going to be bad or, you know, if we're going to have to change anything, but it's their OAuth set up, they're changing it, and they sent me a warning saying I had to make some adjustments. So that's all happening this week, but it's just everybody needs to like prepare for this. And I know people who are just ignoring it. These companies will just lock you out.
Yeah, they will.
They will lock you out.
Yeah.
Of your own product
that you're paying thousands of dollars for. Yeah. Yeah, they don't care. They don't care. They don't
organize.
Yeah, and I think Blackbaud, I think it was a couple years ago, got hit with somebody tried to ransomware them. It failed.
Yes, sir.
But they got backups. They got database backups. And they threatened to release that publicly. And this is stuff that might have bank account information, credit card information. Addresses, phone numbers, personal data that could be used for social engineering. And so Blackbaud paid them. Apparently the data was destroyed, but I think Blackbaud is, like you said, I think it's an insurance company. It's making them do this.
For sure. Like, I know our insurance company, I've had multiple conversations with them. Because they're not being difficult. They just, you know, they have different ways we can achieve the goal. And we went back and forth and found the easiest way. I'm just worried, man. I think in a year, Like, I got them down to 20, you know, 20 people, because these people are the only people that even have a chance at touching confidential or private information.
Yep.
You know, like anything that would fall under that classification. But I think they're going to, I think they're just going to say, nope, anybody with a school email account. I think that's going to be next. So we're probably in the fall going, if it's not too invasive, we're probably just going to go ahead and say school owned laptops. It doesn't matter who uses it. You've got to have, you're going to get an occasional challenge, and you'll just use the Google Authenticator app to, to log in.
Yeah.
I think that's what we're going to do, because it's, I believe in a year we're going to have to do it anyway.
Oh.
But I would rather do it slowly, like a few people at a time over a year, than to have to get it all done like next June. And I could be wrong, but I feel like it's just, we're kind of in like a negotiating phase with the insurance company. And I think what will happen is they're going to come back and say, hey, do you guys want to lower your premiums? I think that's going to be the next move.
Yeah.
And the business office like is going to be like, yeah, we're going to lower our premiums. If people have to log in with a little code every like 5 days, we're going to do that.
Yeah.
So I think every school, like anybody looking at the books is going to say, yeah, we're going to do that. So you just get ready for it, practice it, have a plan, figure out how to do it. Like it's,
I've had people in the past ask me about multi-factor authentication. And so it's an option. Like I've turned it on. So people, if for those who want to use it, they can use it. And everybody who, and so people who come to us, we show them how to turn it on. We show them how to set it up. Some people use they put in their cell phone number and they get a code texted to them. Some people use the Google Authenticator app that you mentioned. Which I like that one. I like that one better than the cell phone texting. And that's kind of
Google.
That's what I use.
Yeah. Google Authenticator is way better than texting.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
And you can use it also for PayPal. You can use it for eBay. You can use it to authenticate for other services as well.
It uses a temporal key. So even if you're not on the internet, it's still working. So every like so many seconds, you get a new key.
Yep. Yep.
And so it's good. It's a very good free product that gets the job done.
Yep.
So
and if you're
I like it. I use it for all kinds of stuff.
And if you're Office 365, Microsoft has their own authenticator. It's called, I think, Microsoft Authenticator. But you can use it. It's the exact same concept. It's Microsoft as well.
It is, but probably when you open the app tells you have to download Internet Explorer to load the website. That's my guess.
Hilarious.
Yeah. So anyway, that's what I'm doing this week, Patrick.
Nice.
Starting the next level of two-factor and trying to get this Razor's Edge stuff sorted.
Well, let me know how it goes. I'm going to drag my feet on the two-factor, multi-factor authentication as long as I can.
I think it's going to be fine as long as the Google backend we already set up doesn't need a major change, because all of our stuff flows through this Google SSO.
Same here. Yeah.
So as long as that's working, it should be totally fine. As long as anyone allows like people to walk into their building unchallenged and access spaces unchallenged, none of this matters. So just keep that in mind. I'm just like, I'm always amazed at the number of steps people take from the technology side, and then their buildings just leak like a sieve. You know, just like some dude walking around, hey, I'm looking for Chad.
Chad here?
What's your name, man? Why are you sitting in Chad's chair? Like, what are you typing? Is that Chad's phone? What are you doing here? Oh, I'm his buddy.
He said I could sit here forever.
Yeah, he said. So anyway, like my point is, if you're going to take these steps on the technology side, take them across the board.
Yeah.
Like just, if you think it's all like Russian and Estonian hackers attacking you from their basement, it's not. People get into your building. People do simple stuff. Like let's take the movie Wall Street with Charlie Sheen. They that is a very common way people get into buildings. They find a cleaning crew. They watch the cleaning crew for a couple days. They'll approach one of them and give them some cash and a USB drive.
Yeah.
That's what they do. This isn't that sophisticated.
No, no.
There's not like a Mission Impossible theme. They watch for people with access who are easy to bribe one time. And that's it. That's what they do. And unless you have cameras covering every inch of your building and every office and every classroom, you're not going to catch them.
Nope.
So this is what I mean when I'm like, why are we doing this when, you know, delivery people, and I'm not talking about my school now, just in general, like every school I think I've worked at, there's been something like this where like some delivery guy just rolls in, leaves the truck, and we don't even know where they're at. Mm. It's like, where's this person at? They're blocking a fire lane.
We have a little entrance. So we have two sets of doors of our entrance. So you walk in and it's a little kind of foyer kind of area. I mean, it's not very big, but we set up a table out there. So we will let them in and then they have to put all the deliveries like just outside. And then we go into the foyer and bring them inside. Like we,
one thing I really like about my school in Mississippi is that the delivery people are known. They're always the same people for literally for UPS, FedEx, whatever, by security, reception. And if one of those people is on holiday, our receptionists and security people always are super friendly, but they're like, oh, hey, you know, where's Tom today? You know, those little things make a big difference because if somebody is up to something, they're not expecting that question and they'll shake a little bit. And I know right now, like if that were to happen, both security and reception, they would be really polite, but then quietly call UPS or FedEx and ask them a question.
Mm-hmm.
They'd be like, hey, you know, we really like Tom. We're just checking on him. That kind of thing.
Wow.
And if they're like, oh, Tom's on his way. They'd be like, well, Fred was just here.
Yeah.
They would flag it up. And that's the kind of stuff I'm talking about. This isn't expensive. This isn't about equipment. It's about having these like casual interactions with human beings and like setting up like different ways to confirm why new people are in your space. That's really it.
That's awesome. That's very good common sense stuff to do that can be done.
I'll try to penetrate your campus in September as an HVAC repairman.
I tell you what, we're a well funded school, and but one thing, our building is very old. It's around 70, 80 years old, and our HVAC is not the best. And
you need me.
If you could actually fix it, because I think we should give the HVAC person their own office. They're here so often. That's how often this, you know. We give this guy coffee. That's how often this guy is here. Where he just goes into the teacher's lounge and gets himself some coffee. That's, you know, and nobody says a word. Everybody's like, "Oh, hey, how's it going?"
That's what you have to do. And back and not as something that's like I'm not trying to downplay this. What Patrick just said, offering them coffee, offer everybody that comes to your campus regularly coffee. Whoever is doing deliveries on a regular basis that you know, be friends with them.
Yeah.
Know a little bit about them. Because, again, this is about building trust relationships. And let's say that you don't know about everyone's lives. Like, you don't know about the UPS driver's life. Maybe the person's having financial problems. A nefarious person watches that person. They're like, okay, the UPS person has access, like on holidays, for example, to drop off packages. We know there's a computer there. They approach that person and say, hey, we're going to give you $1,000 to take this USB and do this. Now, that person needs money. They don't know anything about you. They don't have any relationship with you. They might take that $1,000. You give them coffee and you're friendly to them and you know a little bit about them. They might say, yeah, I'll take the $1,000. Then immediately call you and report the incident and help you stop it. That's the difference. And so little things like just being friendly to people, inviting them in, and welcoming them with, like, you know, anything that you're doing. Just bring them in for a minute and say, hey, you know, we really appreciate you. These things make the difference. I really believe that. I don't think it's anything, because you can't lock schools down like you can, you know, banks and stuff. Like, they have to be communal. They have to be open. They have to be friendly.
And there's usually entrances on every corner, you know.
Yes. Yeah.
So
because schools got to get kids in and out quick for emergencies, for carpool. Like, it's hard to cover all those spaces, and you don't want a militarized presence, you know, at your doors, especially if you have little children.
Yeah.
So, yep, just people you know, trust, bring them in the community. And still, you're going to have to do this multi-factor stuff, because if you don't, your cloud providers and other companies will just turn your stuff off. So,
yes.
That's the world we live in, Patrick.
That is. Oh, man. But in this world that we're living in right now, Tony, it is the summertime. School is out for me. I'm assuming it's out for you as well.
Yeah, it's out. Summer camp kicks off tomorrow. But other than that, school's out, and we're going to be replacing like 40 network switches.
Oh, how many switches? 40?
About 40.
40?
40.
Oh, yeah. My gosh.
I know.
Man, that is, we are a much smaller school than you. We do not have nearly, we are getting a new switch. We're adding a new switch. But that would bring our total of switches. I'm counting up here. We have less than 10 total switches in our entire building. Wow. So we're getting a new one, and that does start next week, that we're getting that installed and configured. And, we just need more space in one of our closets. It's full, no more room.
But I'll tell you what I'm looking at in the fall, maybe.
Okay.
As our backup, emergency backup for one of our buildings, I'm looking at Elon's business version of Starlink.
Oh, I've heard about that.
So we got the pricing. So this is just in case there's a failure, right?
Yeah.
So, and this is why I spoke to some engineers who work with the telecom, and they basically told me that the conduits that carry the fiber into, you know, all these companies.
Yep.
The conduits, the big conduit, is shared by AT&T and all these companies.
Yes.
So I'm like, wait a second.
Yes.
What if the damage that takes the internet out is to the main conduit?
Yeah.
Like, and you were paying for a backup line with another provider. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. Yep. This happened to us.
Then I'm like, yeah. So then I was like, okay, well, what if we have Starlink? So I looked into this. I personally filled out a form for my home for Starlink, because we only have one provider we can use for internet, and they were raising the prices. And I'm like, if they go above a certain amount, I want to see what else is out there. So, anyway, once Starlink became available for the area, I got the little business promotional email and I read it.
Yep.
So it works like this. It's a $2,500 upfront fee that you pay once.
Okay.
To get the hardware and everything and get it installed on the building. But then after that, it's not cheap, but you don't have to use it. Like, you can just pay for it when you need it. So I was I was like, wait, that's perfect for an emergency.
You can just,
like, we could
switch it over. Like, switch it on.
If it could be activated within an hour or two, then it would be worth it. So that's what I'm going to look at next. And this is just one installation at one building. This isn't the whole, because we have two campuses. We have a lot of buildings. This is just the core main, you know, administrative building with all the servers and stuff.
Yeah.
That's what I was looking at.
But that situation you're talking about earlier were these conduit boxes. So we have one of these boxes on our campus, and it's pretty much for the whole neighborhood around us.
Yes.
And you're right. Everything goes into there. Spectrum, Comcast, AT&T. Across the street from it is a telephone pole. And this isn't everywhere, but Indiana, or at least in Indianapolis, all that stuff is, unless it's copper, all that stuff is just strung along the telephone poles because it's super cheap to do it. It's much faster to do it. You don't need an auger. You're not drilling anything. You don't have to worry about tree roots or drainage pipes or anything like that. You're just stringing it up, going down the road, slowly just stringing it up. Somebody hit the telephone pole across the street, and the telephone pole fell a little bit, but it shifted just enough that it pulled all those cables, and they disconnected. So they had to repair the telephone pole and then reconnect everything in the conduit box. And we were down. We had no internet for 4 days. And we had a backup with a different provider, just like you mentioned, and it just didn't matter.
Because it was all coming in there.
And it was all coming in.
This happened to us at our school in Dubai when everything was on copper
fiber. That's right.
Same thing. It took out like the whole neighborhood. It took out the mall, the banks. It took everything down.
Yep. El Barsha was in a bad space for a little while.
And AT&T they put a notice out to us and said that they're not providing any more copper service, which is completely separate. You're right, but they won't provide it anymore. We can't buy it. So I'm like, you know, if we want a true backup, it's got to be either MiFi, I think that's what they call, or business Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Where you've got the like a huge hotspot, you know, that you can turn on.
On 5G but the thing or whatever.
With the, the thing with the hotspots, you can get them, and they'll cover, you know, they're pretty powerful, and they'll do your IP addressing back into your network. They're going to you're going to pay for that unit every month, whether you use it or not.
That's right.
You're paying for it. And you're going to pay for a certain amount of bandwidth even if you don't use it. So I'm going to compare that to using the Starlink, which we know is a flat fee, and then we pay as we go if we need it. And so I'm going to be comparing that.
And Starlink just revamped the satellites they use. I think they have version 2 of the satellites are starting to go up and replace version 1. So I imagine that would be faster speeds, more stability, everything better.
Yep. So anyway, I think it's definitely something I'm looking at in the fall.
Definitely.
And Amazon put something out about K-12 internet through LTE through Amazon, where you can get like a, it sounded like they'll put like an LTE tower on your campus.
Oh.
And then you can, they provide some kind of service if you're a school. So I'm going to look at that too.
Wow. Yeah. That's pretty crazy. I had no idea that they were doing that.
That also sounds like kind of like a beta project that could just die.
Yeah. Yes.
So you think we can get one of those Google hot air balloons, Patrick?
No, they stopped that.
What?
Yeah. Yes. What was that? That was their moonshot. They retired it. They retired it just, oh my gosh, let's see here. They have a different one, though, which actually looks really great. Oh, gosh, where is it at? What do they call it? Oh, it was like Loon. There it is. Loon. L discontinued. Loon. Yep. Yep. But they have another one, which they are doing in remote parts of India. So and the problem they had was it's in these parts are very hilly. And so what they have found is... like laying fiber is not realistic. They have to do it through telephone poles. They can't because it's just so hilly, it's so rocky. They can't drill. And literally they have the fiber on a cart being pulled by a goat. This is like how remote we're talking about. So what they did is that they made these big tall poles that sit at the top of hills, and they can see one another. As long as they have a line of sight, they can deliver up to like 200 Mbps download speeds.
That's pretty cool.
It is. But you have to have a line of sight. Like if a bird lands on one for too long, it could obscure it. If somebody hits the pole and the pole goes down or shifts, like even, I think they have like a, it's a very narrow window. It's like a 4 to 6 inch that it can shift. And after that, then they won't. So there's problems with it, but you know it's like this is better than nothing. No, it's not dandelion. Oh, what is it?
So and Patrick, we need to switch gears quickly. I didn't look at the agenda.
Oh,
did you add it? Did you add a bunch of stuff? Because I had a I had a question for you.
I don't see the question.
No, I didn't type it. I have a question.
Oh, okay. I have one more summer plan real quick. Rode has just released the Rodecaster Pro 2. Actually, it's not. It goes on sale in a week. Just over a week. And so...
Is it supposed to be better with like the file types and all that? Or
I don't know if it's any better in that regard. What it has is a really powerful amp inside of it. So if you have a gain hungry microphone, it'll be able to power that easily. I think they've made it they've reworked the interface, so it's a lot easier to use. Not that it was difficult; it didn't look difficult in any way. But you can now have two USB connections in.
Oh. That's cool.
Which is nice. And you can have two phone lines in. And I'm not sure exactly how the two phone lines work, but that's a possibility now. Whereas before you can only have one. So yeah. There you go. Rodecaster Pro 2 coming out. Pretty cool stuff. So what's your question, Tony? I'm ready.
I have heard that Apple is bringing ports back to laptops. Is this true?
This is true. So on the MacBook Pro, the current one, you can buy this right now. There is the MagSafe. They brought that back. The little magnetic charger, which was great.
Thank goodness.
Yes. No kidding. SD card, full-size SD card slot.
What?
Yep. Two USBs, two USB-Cs, and one USB-A. Oh, no. And an HDMI port. They brought all of that back. It's on.
That's amazing.
But it's only on the MacBook Pro, and the MacBook Pro now starting, Tony, $1,999.
That's still good. I'm glad they brought some of them. It was getting ridiculous.
Yeah, and they killed off the Touch Bar. The Touch Bar is gone.
Thank you.
So
I don't know a single person who uses their Touch Bar.
No, neither do I. It's absolutely useless. It's useless. You know, for fun, we did this about a year ago. Because you can find the old WWDCs on YouTube. We brought that up. I brought that up, and I said, "Watch how stupid this is. Somebody is DJing on the touch bar, and people are just laughing. You can hear people in the audience laughing."
Yeah, who would DJ on something that thin?
Yeah, no,
make any sense.
Yeah, nobody would. No, you just get it. It's terrible. It was a terrible. It was an interesting idea. It was poorly executed. I'll say that.
Yeah. Okay. And then I saw some weird device on their website that looks like a new type of desktop.
Yeah.
It's not a Mac Mini.
It's taller. It's called the Mac Studio. Now Apple is having a WWDC next week, Tuesday. And so apparently there is going to be a Mac Tower next week.
Whoa.
So the Mac Studio is about imagine two Mac Minis on top of each other. It starts at $2,000 though. No monitor, no keyboard, no mouse, no trackpad.
Just well, you know who needs the one unit. Of those?
Who's
Omar.
That? Omar does. Omar. Well, yes and no. You can open this thing up. You can't upgrade it. You can't do any. There are some things about it that aren't it. But people are like, it's a beast. Like if you are doing video editing all day, every day, this is a great thing to have because you can pick whatever screen you want. It can, I think, drive up to three screens.
Right.
And they've got USB-C ports on the front. An SD card slot on the front. So
that's nice.
Yeah, they've got a lot of things going for it. But their monitors, though, are stupid. Like, the only people who buy those monitors are people who just love Apple. That's it.
And I also heard that after this year, no more iPods.
The iPod is gone, officially. They've taken it off the store. It's not there anymore. Oh. So if you want an iPod, you're going to be relegated to eBay or someplace like that, Alibaba.
Yeah.
But it's kind of sad. They're, you know, those things were great. Those things were great for what they were. So
I'll tell you what would be sweet is an iPod, like the thin one, I don't know what it was called. It's like thin, it looked like kind of the shape of like chewing gum.
Oh, like yeah.
A chewing gum?
The iPod Nano.
Okay. What if that was part of your laptop and you could push it and eject it out, Patrick?
Okay.
So you got it in there. You choose your songs and whatever. You throw it over onto it. You hit it, man. Pop it out. And then you use it with your like AirPods while you're working out, and then you pop it back in when you get back in.
That's a sweet idea. That's awesome.
So that you're not running with the 10-pound phone on your body.
Yeah, I hate working out with a phone in my pocket or anything. It's just
no. I use like Bluetooth headphones and put it at a distance. But one of those thin iPods, you can work out with one of those. You don't even notice it.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. They used to have an iPod that had no screen on it. It was really small. Really, really small. Just a rectangle, maybe.
Yeah. I've seen one of those. Yeah.
And they called it
that's what I mean.
Yeah, the iPod Shuffle. And that you don't even pick your songs. You just put songs on it, and then it just shuffles them. That's all it does. But you could clip it, like had a built-in clip, so you could like clip it to your like pocket or something, and you could pause it, go to the next song or whatever. It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. Oh, those days are gone, Tony. They're gone.
Yeah. All right. Well, what can we do? Just gotta move on.
Yeah, move on.
Buy used, people. eBay's loaded.
Yeah, that's right. eBay is loaded, and there's a lot of good, reputable sellers on eBay. Lots of them. Just to do a little bit of homework. But anyway, I don't have anything else, Tony. What about you?
Nope. And I got to get back up and start watching Airwolf. So we got to wrap this up.
Yeah, absolutely. For IT Babble, I'm Patrick.
And I'm Tony.
And we will catch you on the next episode, hopefully next week. So keep on babbling out there.